Now, a new Department of Health Services report shows that drug overdose deaths in Wisconsin have spiked 70% in the past decade.
Drug use, and especially opioid use, is a problem that we're hearing more and more about lately. Between 2005 and 2015, fatal drug overdoses rose from 514 to 872 cases throughout the state per year, which has many in the medical community asking how bad things could get. Here's emergency room doctor Kyle Martin from St. Mary's Hospital in Madison.
I don't know that anyone would have the definitive answer as to whether or not we really have peaked. My hope is that we're getting close to that peak and that, you know, we have increased awareness from a provider standpoint now of the addictive potential. I think that with recent legislation that have been passed too, both nationally as well as at the state level, I think it's increasing awareness of prescriber rules that hopefully, you know, we're reaching that peak or we're near that peak and we start to see a decline as a lot of these efforts start taking effect.
Karen McKeon joins us now. She's a state health officer with the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Karen, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
Well, does the 70% spike in drug overdose deaths come as a surprise to the health department and to Wisconsin's medical community?
You know, we've been looking at this trend over the past years, and I want to just really highlight how serious it is. Drug overdoses, more people are now dying from drug overdoses than from motor vehicle crashes. More people are now dying from drug overdoses than from breast cancer. And what we're seeing is what's driving that increase is opioid-related deaths. So a specific type of drugs, opioids, have actually increased even more. In 2003, we had fewer than 200 people dying from opioid overdoses, and the last 2 years it's been over 600. So we've actually seen that number triple.
And when you talk about opioids, are you talking about prescription painkillers or are you talking about a street drug like heroin?
It includes both of those, but most of the increase has been from prescription drugs.
And why do you think those numbers have gone up so quickly over the years?
You know, this is a really complex problem. People get started using opioids for a lot of different reasons, and so the approaches we're trying to work on with partners are making sure that opioids are harder to get, both prescription and heroin.
And when you look at the big picture here, I mean, here in Wisconsin, you wonder, is it just spiking so rapidly in Wisconsin, or is this a national problem?
This is definitely a national problem. All across the country, we're seeing an increase in deaths related to opioids. Wisconsin is in 2014 was the 24th. So that sounds like we're right in the middle. But again, when you look at the chart, when you look at the graph, it's increasing at a very concerning rate. And so we are considering this a crisis.
And so when something is considered a crisis like this, what's the response?
So the response has been to really issued an advisory to serve as a call to action. Again, we and many of our partners have been looking at this and working on this for years, but this is an opportunity to take an extra look at what we're doing, to call additional partners to the table, and really have redoubled efforts and additional coordination.
Now, before we started talking to you, we heard a little bit from emergency room doctor Kyle Martin from St. Mary's Hospital in Madison. And he said with these numbers, he's wondering, you know, when we're going to hit the peak on this bad news. It sounded hopeful, though, because he was hoping that the effects of some of the positive things happening would be taking effect, too, to start curbing the numbers. Do you see that same kind of thing?
Exactly. We're watching the numbers closely, and we're all hoping that we'll see a turnaround in the trend soon. Certainly we've already put a lot of things into place. As he mentioned, physicians have been good partners to try to figure out how can they prescribe safely, look at other options for pain control, and that's just one of the activities that's happening around the states.
Right, so doctors now, they have to check a database, it sounds like, before they prescribe an opioid and make sure that someone isn't what's called doctor shopping. How is that working so far?
That's working well, and we're continuing to work to make it work even better. That's the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program, and as you indicated, physicians look at that before they prescribe an opioid to someone so that they can see what other medications the patient may be on so that they can really use safe prescribing practices.
And I know that some physicians have said that this is unwieldy so far. There may be some technical problems. Do you think that's getting in the way of how effective it can be so far?
The state's continuing to work on the program to try to make sure that physicians have the easiest access possible and that they can really include that in their usual workflows.
And what are we seeing about raising awareness in communities about the risks of opioids? Part of it is from, you know, the medical side of things, but part of it is within the communities themselves. What's happening there?
Absolutely, and we appreciate your help with raising awareness in communities because everybody has a role to play. So, for example, if you are prescribed an opioid, we encourage you to take it as directed. Any medication you have left over when you're no longer needing it, so you've recovered from your surgery, you're not needing the pain medication anymore, we encourage you not to leave that in your medicine cabinet because you don't know who might access that. And so turn it back in. Coming up later this month on October 22nd is Prescription Drug Take-Back Day, and a lot of law enforcement officials are helping with that. You can Google or just look it up online, Prescription Drug Take-Back Day. And recently Walgreens announced that all of their facilities will also be willing to take back these drugs just to help communities be safer.
We're talking with State Health Officer Karen McKeon right now from the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, talking about a new report that shows a dramatic increase in deaths by drug overdose over the past 10 years. And we'll continue that conversation in a moment, but we'd also like to hear from you on this topic and let us know what you think.
You can join in at 800-642-1234.
We'll take a caller now. We've got Therese on the line in Wauwatosa. Therese, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to share?
I wanted to share that I have two perspectives on it. One, sadly, I have family members who have been affected by the addiction problem. I also have children who have lost friends, more than one, and have attended multiple funerals associated with opioid addiction recently and in the last 2 years. And from that perspective, I got involved with something called Shatterproof, which is an addiction awareness and fundraising national effort. But on the other side, I am also the caregiver for an 88-year-old woman who has multiple afflictions that cause pain. And as she's gotten older, her pain has increased, and now I can't get her access to the drugs that would be helpful for her for pain without jumping through a gazillion hoops. And I find that to be very disconcerting because it appears that the only thing that's being done to address the addiction and the problem with heroin and opioids is to get them out of the hands of patients. And there's got to be a different way. Just keeping it totally out of mainstream medicine is not the answer.
Therese, thank you so much. Wow, I appreciate you sharing that. A very interesting call, all your experiences there, and I'm sorry about the losses that your family has experienced as well. And what would you say to that, Karen, about the two flip sides here? Maybe that the people who really need these opioid medications for severe pain, the access is difficult, and it sounds as though it's becoming a lot more difficult. There are more rigors to go through to get this medication. On the other hand, we have this epidemic going on, which is really harming families, people all across Wisconsin.
Well, Therese, thank you so much for sharing your experience. And we've been saying that this is a complicated situation, and you have just perfectly illustrated how complicated it is. So first, just touching on the experience your family has had with addiction and with losing friends, thanks for your response with that and for engaging with Shatterproof and looking for solutions. And we need to remember that all the numbers we're talking about are faces and names, their loved ones in communities. And so our heart really goes out to you and to the people who are struggling with addiction. We want them to be sure and know that there is hope for recovery and there are options. Physicians can help. There are medications that can help with overcoming opioid addiction, and so just knowing that there is hope. And then you really highlight the opposite side of the problem as well, and that is that some people do need these medications, and clinicians are very much struggling to walk that line of prescribing safely and at the same time aggressively treating pain. And so we're continuing to work with that. Clinicians definitely are. I hear doctors talking about the struggle of knowing how to do this in a safe way and how to treat pain. And I really hope that the 88-year-old that you're providing care for is able to have their pain appropriately treated in a safe way.
Therese, thank you so much for calling. And we'll go next to Johanna in Wautoma. Hi, Johanna.
Hello.
And what would you like to share?
Yes, I'm the mother of three addicted children. And I've had all three overdose. I work with an organization called Wisconsin United We Can, which means Change Addiction Now. And one of the biggest concerns we have, we're a support group for the families and of the addicts. And my biggest concern is trying to get treatment for these people with addiction because of the fact that most of them don't have insurance, and there's only one treatment facility that I know of in the state of Wisconsin that is, it does no charge, it's faith-based, and a lot of the other treatment facilities do not accept Badger Care. What is there anything in line to possibly get more beds available for these people to get them into?
Johanna, thank you so much for that. And what about the options? It sounds as though Johanna's getting there at a there are not being enough options for people who need the help recovering from addiction, and financial is being part of that. What if people don't have the right insurance and they can't get that bed? Karen?
You're exactly right. This is certainly another challenge. And Johanna, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your struggles and your family's struggles. One of the things that the state and our partners are looking at is how to make sure that there is access to treatment for people who are struggling for addiction and who are seeking to enter recovery. And that also is very complicated, but we appreciate you sharing your story, and that is one of the things we're looking at. And I also wanted to touch on, you mentioned that your children have overdosed in the past, and one of the things that we've tried to do to help with that is to make naloxone or Narcan more available. So today, there's a standing order in the state that allows pharmacies to sell naloxone to anybody, basically, so that you would even be able to access naloxone to have it available if you found one of your children having overdosed, that you would be able to give them this medication to reverse that overdose. So making that more available in communities is certainly an important part of the work that we're doing to make sure that addicts are able to live and enter recovery.
Karen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
That was Karen McKeon, a state health officer with the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, joining us to talk about deaths from drug overdoses in Wisconsin. And thank you to everyone who called to share their stories. We live in the dairy state, and that means we're more or less surrounded by amazing Wisconsin cheese. But even so, it can be easy to get stuck in a Swiss or a cheddar or a Colby rut.
So for American Cheese Month, we asked a former Wisconsinite and current cheese writer to join us to talk about what to try next time you're in the market for new, exciting cheese options made in Wisconsin.
Tanaya Darlington is with us. She teaches writing at St. Joseph's University in Philadelphia and writes about cheese professionally, including on her blog. When she's in cheese mode, she goes by the name Madame Fromage. Tanaya, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So a lot of people love cheese, myself included, but not everybody makes it part of their vocation in life. So what is it about cheese that first made you fall in love with it?
Well, honestly, it was living in the state of Wisconsin for 10 years. I lived in Madison. And just being surrounded by great cheese producers, and of course going to the Dane County Farmers Market and being able to buy cheese directly from cheesemakers was exciting. I ended up leaving Madison to take a teaching job in Philadelphia back in 2005, and the first thing I did was seek out like the best local cheese shop and strive to meet local cheesemakers. And I really realized that Wisconsin was a special place because I feel like there, you know, people know about Wisconsin cheese, and a lot of people know their own cheesemakers. Where here, you know, it's still kind of a new thing.
Well, one thing I'm curious about, I mean, you lived here for 10 years, and this is a few years ago now, but was artisanal cheese always such a big thing in Wisconsin, or is it something, are we in sort of the midst of a cheese renaissance right now?
We are in the midst of a cheese renaissance. And it's funny you should ask, because when I lived in Madison, I worked at Isthmus Newspaper working for the food section. And Odessa Piper at L'Etoile, who's kind of a legendary chef figure there, really took me under her wing. I was in my late 20s and just kind of getting started in journalism, and she pulled me into her kitchen one day and just said, hey, you really need to pay attention to what's happening in artisan cheese. Things are about to get really interesting. And a few weeks later, she had me in to try some Uplands Pleasant Ridge Reserve, which is now one of the most decorated cheeses in America from Wisconsin. And I remember she was trying that cheese with Mike Gingrich, and they were trying to figure out how long to age it. And I look back on that as kind of a seminal moment, because she was the one who really told me this is going to be a thing. And sure enough, I mean, now we're at a point in our history when there are more artisan cheesemakers than ever before, and there's crops of young people going into the industry, and it's really exciting. You're seeing all kinds of entrepreneurial cheese models out there. And it was not like that, you know, say 15, 20 years ago.
So you have some perspective now. You moved from Wisconsin to Philadelphia. Does it still seem like Wisconsin has a corner on the artisanal cheese market?
Depends where you're standing. When I first moved out here, I went to the best local cheese shop and I asked for Uplands Pleasant Ridge Reserve. And the cheesemonger, you know, kind of batted his eyes for a minute and he just said, who are you? How do you know about that cheese? And I said, oh, I'm from Wisconsin. And I said, do you have it? And he said, well, of course we have it. He said, but nobody ever asks for that cheese. Now I think, you know, he would beg to differ. And I will say, whenever I tell people I'm from Wisconsin, if they know cheese so often, unless they've been there, they think it's kind of, it's all cheddar and it's all mass production. And I'm always stressing, like, no. If you visit, you know, you meet the grape makers at the farmers markets. There are a lot of wonderful cheesemakers there. You know, some of it you see on the East Coast, some of it you don't. I think one of the cool things about artisan cheese is it tends to be, you know, kind of small batch production, and therefore cheesemakers are selling directly to people at markets and not necessarily, you know, reaching beyond the state level or the regional level. So, I mean, one thing I'll say is that I feel like I'm always out here standing up for Wisconsin cheese, and I'm always glad when I see it. But I still feel like there's a little bit of a crusade to be had to show people, hey, great cheese on the East Coast isn't just coming from the Hudson Valley. There are great cheeses coming out of Nebraska, out of Indiana, out of Wisconsin. So I think because Wisconsin's such a huge producer, of course they're always in the news. But I still think that you know, like Willie Lehner, who's such a legend in Madison. I remember walking into a New York City cheese counter, Murray's, a couple of years ago, and seeing his cheeses front and center, and I almost fell over. I just thought, I can't believe this. I used to get this at the farmer's market. Whenever I go back to Madison, I still seek out Willie Lehner's cheeses, and to see him recognized at Murray's, I mean, he doesn't need that recognition, but to see him out there, for me, was like this golden moment, like, ah, Wisconsin has arrived.
Well, you mentioned that perception about cheddar, and I guess Wisconsin is, you know, kind of known for its cheddars. And as a mom now, I feel like sometimes, even though I love experimenting with all kinds of different cheeses and buying them and buying too many and then not eating all of them, but we do get sometimes stuck with a cheddar rut in my family, two kids who like cheddar and are still expanding their horizons. So what do you suggest for people, even here in Wisconsin, who might want to break out of that cheddar Swiss Colby rut? Where can we go next?
Sure. Well, first of all, I love some Wisconsin Goudas. In fact, one of my favorite cheeses to return to is Marika Gouda with fenugreek. I don't know if you've ever heard of Marika Penterman. She's Holland's family cheese in Thorpe, Wisconsin. And she's from the Netherlands. She came to Wisconsin. She started making Gouda. And she's one of the only people I know who puts fenugreek seeds, it's a traditional preparation, fenugreek seeds into her cheese. And fenugreek has kind of an oaty, nutty, oniony taste to my mind. And it just pairs beautifully with Gouda. It's really savory. It's kind of the way an everything bagel is like better because there are seeds on top. So that for me is like a go-to Wisconsin cheese. I just love Marika's Goudas. And just yesterday, someone passed me a piece of Jeff's Select Gouda. It's another Gouda coming out of Wisconsin. It's really interesting because it's a collaboration between two guys named Jeff, a cheesemaker named Jeff in Wisconsin. He works for Maple Leaf Cheese. And he started sending his Gouda over to Minnesota to a guy named his name is Jeff Jerkin, at the Caves at Faribault. It's a big sandstone aging facility. And so they collaborate on this cheese. It's made in Wisconsin. It's aged in Minnesota. It's really interesting. It's more savory than a lot of Goudas I've tasted. Really delicious, great price point. So those are two other cheeses to seek out. The other cool thing that's happening in Madison is that there's a guy named Bill Anderson, a young cheesemaker. He's got a company called Creme de la Coulee, makes all French-style cheeses himself. But he started a Wisconsin cheese club that I began hearing whispers of because he'll do, like, drop-off points around the city of Madison, like at wine stores. People can go and get their wine for the weekend, but then they can also get his cheeses. And he's teamed up with a couple other cheesemakers, Lily Lehner being one of them, and he does these bundles of artisan Wisconsin cheese. So you can essentially get like a Wisconsin cheese CSA, really cool cheeses, and he also just started shipping nationally. So that's a way to like get more cheeses than what you might normally reach for, you know, onto your cheese board because he has a rotating selection. So like to me, that kind of entrepreneurial enthusiasm of a young cheesemaker is exciting. He's trying to figure out how do I, you know, spread the word about my cheese. He's got some unusual French-style cheeses, really, really wonderful. And so instead of just the farmer's market route, he started this CSA model that is really taking off.
Oh, those all sound great. Yeah, I think I just happened to try the fenugreek Gouda you mentioned earlier this week, and it was delicious. And I thought, well, I don't know if everyone will be on board with the fenugreek because it is different, but it was delicious cheese.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, I'm not someone who usually likes things in cheese, but I feel like they work so complementary together, the kind of the sweetness of that cheese and then the savoriness of the seeds.
You also mentioned in an email where you were listing a few of your favorites, an award winner, the 2016 World Champion Cheese winner is Amiras Grand Cru Sirchois. I think
absolutely.
I said it at least close to
you
right.
Did.
But yeah, tell
I
us about that one.
That is a fantastic cheese. In fact, I have some at home in my cheese drawer, and I just love to bring it into work. It's a great desk cheese, as I call it. Dirty, good with lots of things. I'm actually at work, and I have a whole desk drawer that's like a pantry full of like little pairings that I'll pull out, and I have a wine fridge under my desk where I keep cheese. Grand Cru Sirchois in there right now. Yeah, that's a cheese that has just risen through the ranks and won award after award. It's another, you know, great cheese to seek out, I think, around this time of year because it's so savory. It's great for melting. Like, I love that cheese in any sort of potato dish or over a French onion soup. But it's also just great on its own. It's herbaceous. It's got a kind of a nutty sweetness, really complex, but really likable. And that cheese was selected as a world cheese champion out of 3,000 entries. So not just the United States, but the entire world. It's like the best cheese in the world is coming out of Wisconsin.
Nice.
So that, I mean, that's a great honor. And also the American Cheese Society Best of Show winner this year was from Wisconsin. That was a cheese called Little Mountain by Chris Rowley. And I'm told that no one has it because I called around looking for it after he won. But it was made in small amounts and of course, it just sold out right away. Mm. Another really cool Alpine-style cheese, like the Amiras Grand Cru.
I want to ask you about the desk cheese thing, because we just had this discussion yesterday with our executive producer, who's married to a man from France, and she said that they have sort of just a cheese bell and put not soft cheese, but you know, sort of your harder cheeses or whatever the designation is there, but beneath a bell and did not refrigerate them. And therefore, the cheese was always at room temperature. You didn't have to wait for it to get to its peak after you took it out of the fridge. Do you do that? Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like it's something most Americans do, but I'd be open, you know, to trying that if it's safe.
Right.
What do you think? Do you do that?
Well, I do have a cheese bell. It's on the small side, but I love to use it. It has a marble base, which is really handy because marble stays cool, and so the cheese stays cool, but it's still, you know, kind of room temperature cool. And especially if I have a little softy that I feel like isn't quite ripe. Like when you touch it, it's a little too firm. I'll put that in there in the cheese ball and just let it kind of set out overnight or even, you know, a couple of days. And then when you eat it, it's, you know, you can kind of like, it's almost like you have your own little ripening cave. But yeah, I don't see why not. You could definitely keep a little cheese bell in the house. And what a great snack to be able to pass through the kitchen.
It could be dangerous, at least in my house. But.
Well, totally dangerous.
Well, I want to end by a suggestion of yours. You've been combining Alpine cheeses, and you mentioned one of those earlier, with a particular Wisconsin drink. What is that winning combo?
Oh, it is the old-fashioned. And I have to tell you, this was a combination that Mike Gingrich of Uplands Cheese once mentioned when I happened to tour his facility. And I remember thinking, oh, that just seems like, because he's from Wisconsin, of course, he's going to have an old-fashioned with his cheese because he makes, you know, the great Alpine-style Pleasant Ridge Reserve. But in fact, so I did a cocktail book with my brother who lives there in Madison, and I really got back into the old-fashioned. And one night I had a bunch of Alpine cheeses that I got from the local cheese shop, and I just thought, what the heck, I'm going to try these two together. And it was fascinating because it worked so well. I thought, ah, oh, Mike was really onto something and didn't pay attention. You know, bourbon has, I like to make a bourbon old-fashioned. It has, you know, kind of earthy quality, but also kind of sweet caramelly notes. And then an old-fashioned also has, like, a good number of shakes of Angostura bitters, which are kind of like your holiday spices. And they just somehow wrap around those nutty, sweet, herbaceous flavor notes in the cheese. And they are glorious together. So that's become my new favorite pairing.
Tanaya, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It was great talking to you, Veronica.
Tanaya Darlington teaches writing at St. Joseph's University in Philadelphia and writes about cheese professionally, including on her blog. She joined us there to talk about what's new in the Wisconsin cheese world.